Hi, this is Pep Phelan from the Melbourne Poach Centre. I have with me today Troy Walker. Hi, Troy.
Hi, Pep.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Thanks so much for coming in. I'm actually really excited to speak with you. I know we've had a few conversations over the phone and, you know, share a lot in common sort of professionally. So this is a really great opportunity and I'm excited to talk with you.
Oh, likewise. I appreciate the experience and thanks so much for reaching out.
So tell me more about yourself, Troy. So, you know, where you're from, what your profession is, and what you're getting up to at the moment.
So I was born in a small Victorian town called Shepparton, and I very quickly moved back to Tjukurmaima on country, where my mob's from. I'm a Yorta Yorta man, and from my pop side, he was born on the Kamarounda Mission. And basically, what's brought me to where I am now is I essentially always had an interest in helping people on some level, and I wasn't entirely sure going through secondary school how I was going to do that. But it turned out that I applied for doing an advanced diploma in my therapy, and that went really well. I had some really great lecturers there in the first year, one of which was a great chiropractor, and he taught us physiology. And in conjunction with him and a really great mentor who I'm still proud to call one of my closest friends back in Echuca, who was a chiro, they kind of both nudged me in the direction of studying chiropractic. So I applied first year out of my year of myo, which I loved, and got a real appreciation for the musculoskeletal sciences and therapies, and was able to undertake a three-year bachelor's degree in applied science at MIT. And then following master's degree in clinical chiropractic to finish up in 2009. And I practiced in mainstream clinics for about 3 or 4 years before traveling for about 12 months. And then I met my lovely wife in 2012 and moved back to Echuca and essentially just wanted to start practicing with my mom here in Tjukurmaima at my local Aboriginal medical service.
Okay, so you've been practicing as a chiropractor with your local Aboriginal medical service.
Yes, I have been. At the moment, it's been a little bit, I've avoided face-to-face contact just at the moment because of the current circumstances of COVID. And a lot of it's been sort of phone calls and reassurances and doing it via a distance, so to speak. And then I suppose I got a bit of a bug too. I forgot to mention about 5 years into practice where I wanted to do a little bit more study in the area of nutrition. And I went and did some further work at Deakin. So it turned into a postgraduate certificate in nutrition, turned into a master's in human nutrition. And I was lucky enough to get picked up by Monash University to do work in Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander health as it relates to nutrition and physical activity, but particularly looking at young adults. And we did some work there with how health is communicated, particularly on social media as well. So we try to blend a few different things in there together. So to say that I'm just doing the clinical chiro would be a myth. I'm doing a blend of a few different things, Indigenous health research as it relates to those areas of mine that I feel probably more confident in, physical activity, nutrition in particular.
So I was introduced to you through a really good friend of mine, Dr. Dean Vinzini, who's at RMIT University. And I know he did his PhD working in Kempsey with the local mob there. They wanted him to do some research around some of their bush medicine. And I approached him and asked him if there was anyone that he could point me in the direction of that would be really interesting to speak to, who worked not so much in the straight sort of Western-based sort of allied sciences, but more an integrative medicine practitioner, and you were the person that he pointed to. It's awesome to be able to speak to you. And do you know if there's any other chiros that are Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander?
I've been working on that, Pet. So, you know, I found Uncle Bill Hayward over in Western Australia. Him and I had a yarn the other day. He was the first ever Indigenous chiropractic graduate back in 2008, and I followed a year behind him in 2009. And since that time, we've tried to retrace a little bit. He's working on sort of the Western Perth universities and chiropractic fraternity over there, and I'm working on this coast to try and recruit through the ACA just how many of our mob are practicing as chiros. And we've through a lot of the help from the ACA so far, and a good friend of mine, Julie at RMIT, we've been able to track down a couple of students and some practitioners. And I think the count's so far at about between 7 and 9, as far as we know, nationwide. So we're Uncle Bill and I were working on trying to get a few of the mob together to form something of an Indigenous chiropractors network or an association as such, so that we've all got each other for peer support, but also for any of the mob that did want to see where we're at and why, where we might be practicing if they wanted to come visit. So we're absolutely in the process of that now, as it's funny you mentioned that. And also massive shout out to Dean. Dean's one of those men, as you would well know, that just is such a connector of people too. He's able to put so many people in touch and does it in a way that is so incredibly modest and humble. So absolutely love Dean. Shout out to him.
Yeah, a non-Indigenous man who's worked for basically his entire life in Indigenous health and promoting Indigenous health and Indigenous health professionals, connecting people up and doing it with such cultural humility. He's just such a humble person. I absolutely love him. How have your core values underpinned your work?
Core values have underpinned my work in the sense that I've just always had the idea that I've wanted to help in some capacity with others. I never, like I mentioned in secondary school, I was never clear on exactly how that path would shape itself, but it just happened to. In a lot of ways, it's always been at the back of my mind, and now it seems to just be there at the forefront all the time, always wanting to improve upon what it is that I'm constantly doing with the mob and the people that I'm with day to day. And I think that there is a sense of probably, if I'm really honest, selfishness there too. I do a lot of this to improve upon myself. Mm-hmm. And I feel like if I'm not at my best as often as I can be, I'm going to be quite ineffective with others and to be able to assist in that capacity. So that's really what drives me in that regard, is just my ability to want to help others, but also the best thing I can do so as to help others is to probably try and look after myself as best as I can too.
Yeah, I mean, that's a phenomenal approach, and I think certainly more people should take that on board. I know you and I were talking before that as health professionals, it's actually not our job to fix anyone, that our responsibility is to facilitate a process, but it is ultimately our clients or our patients' responsibility to help themselves and to have the education, the knowledge and those sort of things to assist themselves and to take some responsibility, whether it's, you know, eating correctly or exercising or meditating or whatever it is. And we're there to help in any capacity where they're not able to do that.
So yeah. True, Ben. I think the thing too that sticks with me a lot about what you're saying there is there's a lovely, well-known chiropractor, Dr. Craig Liebenson, who's published a couple of textbooks on rehabilitation of the spine. And it's so funny now because if you listen, what's so humble about a guy like that is he talks about, like he said, look, don't buy my textbook anymore because I was so focused on motor patterns and movement activation when it came to musculature and such. And he said now he's just realizing that this matters a lot less than he gave it credit for. And it's really a lot more about reassurance and self-care and making people realize in a sense that they have the inherent and the innate capacities to be able to look after themselves most of the time, or maybe all of the time. But they might just need, like you mentioned, some facilitation or some guidance in that process. And I think that's where we really have a role to play. And it's one of my fears in my field sometimes, and that's all field relative to health and musculoskeletal therapy and nutrition science and dietetics and stuff as well, is that if you people become dependent on you, and I sometimes see that as a bit of a concern, because it's like it's great that you're there to, as you mentioned, facilitate their process and their self-healing, but it can be detrimental if they become almost dependent on your passive care as opposed to empowering them with active tools to realize that they can do a lot of those things themselves. And that you're just there as a bit of a guide. And Craig talks a lot about that. And I think he used the analogy of, you know, most therapists look at themselves as Batman, but we should be looking at ourselves more as like an Alfred, and that the patient's Batman. And I thought that was really, really cool.
Yeah, I suppose it speaks a lot to, you know, the way that particularly Western medicine has placed the doctor on a pedestal. You become passive in your healing process. The doctor is the sort of the active dynamic component. And, you know, that's come all the way through. And we don't even have time to talk about all those social components as it relates to Indigenous community, the disempowerment, the oppression, the lack of self-determination due to government policies, etc. I'm not talking about sort of self-responsibility from a, you know, a neoliberalist perspective. I'm just talking about it from each of us is an empowered being, and with the right knowledge and some really basic things, we can really help ourselves to be the best version of ourselves and, you know, see health professionals as facilitators in that process, particularly in those areas where we might not have the level of knowledge required to get to where we want to go. In your experiences working in chiropractic, working in nutrition and academia, what have you learned about influence, impact, and leadership?
That's a great question, Pat. I've learned a lot about all of those things, but I still find it difficult to come to terms with being as good as a leader as I possibly can, or modeling things as best as I can so as to let others realize that they can do the same if they choose to. So I think that what working in the health professions has really taught me, particularly both clinically and from an academic perspective, is that I never envisioned myself as someone who was inherently intellectual. I don't think I have this through the roof IQ, something which most people seem to affiliate with academic success or with clinical work. I just felt that if I have a good work ethic and I'm resilient and have enough of an ability and a mindset to move forwards in spite of obstacles, that I'll be okay. And that's always stuck with me, predominantly through my upbringing and what I was taught from my family. And as a result of that, it's been lucky, and I've been lucky in a few ways to be impactful on some level, and sort of in some instances be privileged enough to be somewhat of a leader. I'm even tentative to use that term, but be someone that hopefully a lot of our younger mob can look to and ask any kind of questions that they'd like to, so I can give them, in a sense, I hope, that confidence as well to realise that absolutely in their capabilities to do so. And at the same time, from a younger man looking at our elder mob, hopefully gain that respect from our elders and be able to know that they can trust me as well when it comes to things in and around sort of the clinical and academic context relative to chiropractic work, pain management, musculoskeletal care, and nutrition advice.
What does Indigenous leadership mean to you, and how do you think Indigenous leadership can assist across the health industry?
Indigenous leadership to me is, I don't have a universal idea of it, but I think it's just, to me, it's this idea of striving, showing resolve, showing sort of a resilience and a grit to be able to move forwards in any particular path, and also realizing that you can do it very much in a sense of togetherness. Leadership doesn't necessarily have to be the N equals one example, as I think we've thought about it in other ways. It can be a very collaborative experience. I think that we can be leaders in so many different fields. And I think feeding back on a lot of Indigenous knowledge and the things that we've been raised on, storytelling that, you know, Pop would share with me that's still so vivid, is that everything was done from a sense of mindfulness, gentleness, working together in a friendly approach. They're some of the memories I have of Pop and the leadership that he's provided, and also, yeah, from my mother as well. So I think that Indigenous leadership is a collective effort, and there isn't an inherent individual that does it right. I think we need each other.
Mm-hmm. This is an interesting question because obviously there's only a few of you, but what knowledges, skill sets and strengths do you believe that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander chiropractors can bring to chiropractic and manual therapy in this country?
I think they can bring, like you mentioned the word holistic before, I think what's really resonant about the chiropractic profession in a lot of ways is it does have a really good emphasis on conservative and holistic approaches to care. It does this through a lot of lifestyle related factors and things that we have traditionally just done as a people for 60,000 years. So I think that, you know, just concentrating on eating well, paying attention to your body, being mindful, staying physically active, and things to that nature. I think the holistic approach that chiropractic and most allied health professions in general are really great with this. And I've got to give a lot of credit to medicine. We do often give medicine a bit of a bad name sometimes, but I think it's interesting. I think we're definitely evolving to a much, much better point as a collective with that too. I think we're getting better at collaborating across health professions. There's not as much stigmatization in and around titles, and which is great to see. They're still clearly there, but they're getting better. But for, like you mentioned, I know that there's not too many of us. Hopefully we can work on that. But I think that the best thing, you know, at least in my experiences, is that to be reassured that clinical practice is exactly that. You will go through a lot of trials and tribulations with each and every individual in front of you, and every single person, mob or otherwise, will present as a textbook or as you are taught through university schooling days. So I think that from the perspective of what advice or what would I say, it would be that we resonate strongly with the holistic idea. And I think that we have a real ability to be able to work in with that concept as it looks at really promoting people to be their own pilot. And mm-hmm. if we can sort of reassure them in that regard, and if we can give them some, like you mentioned, I love the word facilitation, or some guidance in that natural process, then I think we're really drawing from traditional Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander ways as well, which I think really syncs with a lot of the chiropractic mindset. Without sounding too wishy-washy too, you know, I think that that's really important to bring up, because I know that we have such a attention to evidence-based practice and the scientific method, and I respect all that. I get to do all that. I understand it, but it's not always the only way.
What about in relation to your nutrition and dietetic practice?
Yeah, that's become a really massive emphasis lately, Pep, and I have found it recently from the 2020 report on nutrition in Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people from the Indigenous Health Info Net, but there's not many of us in that space either. There's about 7 or 8 in that area too, I mm-hmm. think. So it's obviously a field that you could absolutely have more of us. I think that would be fantastic, so which I would encourage jumping into nutrition education or dietetic education, and the same with the musculoskeletal therapies as much as you possibly can. The nutritional components are interesting because I think things like the sort of general-based Australian dietary guidelines, they get a lot of negative attention. I think sometimes undue, because I think that they are generally sufficient for populations, and they have made subtle modifications for our mob, which is great to see, and eating a lot of traditional foods when and wherever possible. And also in that regard too, just knowing that I think innately, if you were to give, we generally know what to do. We're switched on. I think we know what to do. If you were to give people a shopping trolley and say, look, go and get some really healthy foods, most people I think would be really savvy as to know what it is that they need to go and get. It's just the power of marketing and companies and even product placement and things as such like that play such influence on sort of the psychology behind how we purchase food, what we look mm-hmm. for. And they stimulate the visual senses, the kinesthetic senses, and obviously clearly you only need to work in most supermarkets now, and you can even see you can smell when they're baking products and stuff, like things are placed for an absolute purpose, you know, so, and hence the old adage, don't shop when you're hungry, or go in with a list. Most people really know what to do. They're just, like you mentioned earlier, Pat, this idea of social determinants, some of those things are structured in such a way that it makes it very difficult for the individual or the family to go in there and say, oh, we're just going to grab this, this and this, because especially if you've got the kids coming in there with you, come on, buy us this or get us that. And marketers are clever. They'll put so much time and energy into ensuring that the kids, they're at eye level when they see those Cadbury chocolate blocks and it makes it tough for parents and even for individuals that walk in and, you know, they've had a rough day at work. There's a little bit of stress from a big day. You know, they might find some sort of a remedy in a quick and convenient packaged food. And so I think from the nutritional perspective, I really believe, similarly to how we move our body, we've got the wisdom to know what to do. We're just up against an environment that can be very difficult.
It's interesting you talk about that because, you know, I come from sort of the social and emotional wellbeing perspective. I've worked as a clinical counsellor and my interest is in mindset, in, you know, how people make decisions, why they make decisions. So, you know, whether that's motivation or decision psychology, et cetera. And I think any of these things across any of the professions, it's all about health decisions or decisions that people make for their lives. How do you think, and this is just a question that's popped up as you've been talking, but how do we educate people on decision-making and chemistry? So related to, you know, serotonin, endorphins, oxytocin, and dopamine, you know, because these are the sort of the key drivers of our decision-making, our reward systems. How do we educate people on the chemistry of the body? You know, when people are looking at why kids get addicted to social media, why people are drinking alcohol, why they're smoking cigarettes, why they exercise, why they partake in illicit substance and end up, you know, abusing them. It's all related to these sort of innate reward systems.
$4 million question, Pep. I think that is so true. If you could just, I speak with a good friend of mine, Rowan. He's a social worker and he's an Alice Springs boy. And we had a joke the other month about over a coffee about if there was just a switch, you know, you could just flick that switch that just turned people's neurochemistry into action. Just, this is what I'm going to do. I've made a decision. You go past those stages of change and, you know, pre-contemplation, contemplation, and you start looking into things of how am I going to be proactive now? If we could just find the answer to that, I think as clinicians, as therapists, as practitioners, as health professionals, as people, we would be so, so good. But what tools do I think, I mean, I try to go back to simplicity with this as well, because academia and clinical work can be sometimes so complex and often overly complex, much more so than it needs to be. But from a simple point of view, I think the best way to talk about it is start with moving. I think it's really important. Physical activity is I think, a key in helping with brain chemistry. I think it's been shown time and again just how good it actually is for just about every single thing that exists from a health perspective, physical, mental, social, emotional, and otherwise. And the other big thing that is getting so much more attention now, which is fantastic, is sleep and the importance of a good night's sleep and good quality sleep and good sleeping routines. And I think to sort of synergize with that idea is a healthy diet. And, you know, it's funny, there's debate in nutrition sciences about this even, that absolutely we know that if you break down certain, and there's been a focus away from nutrients now and looking more at food. And there's an area now called nutritional psychiatry that looks in and around how nutrition can play a role in mental health in a way that we traditionally looked at psychiatry as we prescribe drugs and medication. And nutritional psychiatry is trying to look at things and break down certain nutrients and things like that. And there's still an absolute place for that. But a lot of nutrition science is also looking at let's concentrate on food, because we eat food, we don't eat nutrients. And so I think if people eat a high quality diet from a variety of food sources, they're going to be in a really good position to help themselves mentally and help themselves not just mentally, but probably with their activities and their behaviors almost as a result of that. And interestingly, I sometimes wonder, the placebo effect can be so powerful without negating that, you know, that there's nutrients in these foods, just like fruits and vegetables, for example, are clearly healthy for us across the board. Having said that, I think there's clearly something to the fact that when we eat those things, we feel good, not just because of their nutritional content, but also because we know on some level psychologically that they're healthy for us. So as a result of that, we get almost like a double hit of, this is fantastic, this feels good for me. So it not only instills probably good brain chemistry from both of those perspectives, but it also does it in the sense that it makes you want to be more proactive in other domains in your life. Mm-hmm. Because I eat well, I'm more inclined to probably want to exercise well. And because I'm exercising regularly now, it's going to make me more likely to want to prepare myself for the next day and get a good night's sleep. So I think everything's so synergistic. I mean, it's never brought down to one singular variable, which is often what we do in science. We try and break things down as much as we possibly can. But in the real world, it's really interesting. In practice, you've got to just trial so many different strategies and ideas and things, and what might work for one individual might be the absolute opposite for the next. So it's such a big question, and I wish I knew the answer.
It's interesting that you say that. I totally agree with you. For me, I think it's just about finding just the first thing, the one thing that sort of brings you a sense of enjoyment. So that healthy activity, or that healthy thing that brings you the sense of enjoyment. And I think everything else follows from there. So for some people, it's just starting a 5 or 10 minute meditation routine in the morning, and all of a sudden they're making better food choices. They're deciding to go out and get fresh air, go for a walk. For other people, they eat well, and all of a sudden the exercise comes because they're like, well, if I'm eating well, I'm going to go out and exercise and really get healthy. I think it's really interesting, and just finding that one thing that works for you, and then just adding the next thing, and then adding the next thing, and then adding the next thing.
Small steps. Yeah, definitely.
So for any Indigenous person looking to go into a career either in musculoskeletal medicine such as chiro, or into nutrition and dietetics, is there any piece of advice that you could give them about either going into that area or the enjoyment of that area, or how you think it will contribute?
Absolutely. I think it's really important, Pet, from my perspective as I've gotten older, to realise that to follow things that you're passionate about. And, you know, I try and put all other things now in the background, and I try and focus on the things that I'm most passionate about. And that's, you know, food, nutrition and diet, physical activity and musculoskeletal movement, and also like how that relates to pain and how that can be, in a sense, alleviated or remedied. And also I've got a really big interest in age-related muscle loss and how to prevent that too. And I've been really fortunate to start to align the things that I'm passionate about just through time and experience, and starting to know myself a bit more. You mentioned the idea of being mindful earlier and meditating. I incorporate those things quite regularly, as I feel it gives me a lot of clarity in my career and my decision making, also in my personal life. And the other thing I'm really big on is, I know that it's really important to do what it is that you're passionate about, and that can be anything. I mean, education is something that I love in terms of going and doing certain things to be able to have these, I suppose, skills to do what I do, but that can apply to anything, a trade, whatever it is that you want to do, go after it. But I'd also encourage it people that want to get into these particular domains that I'm into, please reach out to me. If I can have a yarn with you directly, I'd be absolutely more than happy to. So, I mean, I'm only really active on LinkedIn. I don't really use any other social media outlets. I use Facebook a bit because Messenger is so popular these days. I generally stay away from Twitter because it becomes very argumentative, and I generally steer clear of Instagram stuff too. I think I was born a little bit too late for the selfie era. So I steer clear of the Instagram stuff as well. But I am on LinkedIn, and I'd be more than happy for anyone that does listen, or anyone that, you know, that's interested in those areas that you hear along the grapevine, to get in touch with me to have a yarn about things. Because even if there's a seed of doubt in terms of what is required from a studying perspective and things like that, I'm sure I can simmer those things down, because it's nowhere near as bad as we just generally perceive it to be. You often get through it, and you get really good support from, I mean, the universities I didn't mention, but at RMIT when I was going through chiropractic, I also had Stuart McFarlane there, who was the Aboriginal liaison officer. And Stuart and I are still in touch now. He was just such an incredible man that helped me tremendously, especially when I was a young guy moving away from home, really close with my family. And Stuart helped in that transition just enormously. So there's always that support there. And now, more than ever, people are embracing change, they're being more appreciative of Indigenous knowledges and ways of being and doing. So there's more openness to it as well. And there's also a lot more of the mob that are just so educated now and fantastic that you can reach out to people and they'll genuinely get back to you.
So what do you see are the major keys to empowering the lives of Indigenous people both locally and around the world? And what is your unique vision?
The major keys in terms of empowering our mob, I think, are knowing that we're there for one another, knowing that we're there in a connected and collaborative way. I think going to be and is essential for what it is that we do and whatever it is we pursue. We talk a lot about health education, and this is what this podcast is about, but that can be any field. And look, really embracing our diversity as Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people and Indigenous people worldwide, by appreciating one another, even if we have differences of opinion, if they're subtle, if they're enormous, realizing that some of those things are really, really healthy for our progression as a people. And that it's fantastic to have mob in your life that you get along with and you establish friendships and connections with, but also realizing you can learn a real lot from people that you don't necessarily have the most in common with. I really hope we can move in a direction where we're a lot less divisive, both within ourselves and also with non-Indigenous people, so we can move forwards together for our livelihood's sake. And that would be an incredible thing to be able to witness in my life. I hope it happens, but really just my hope would be that we can move forwards together as a collective and really embrace one another and understand one another as best as we possibly can, even if we don't always agree on the same thing.
Dr. Troy Walker, thank you so much for coming in and having a talk with me and sharing your incredible insight and your incredible knowledge. And I'm sure there's so many people who will appreciate what you've shared today. I look forward to speaking with you and working with you in the future, however that pans out.
Likewise, Pep, so do I. Thank you.